Okay, so up to this point, we were just talking about the progression of computers and how originally it was just word processing. There was really no internet as such. The first computers back in the early 80s were primarily word processing and a few simple programs. And then slowly came spreadsheets. And then this is just from memory. My guess is sometime in sort of the mid 80s to the late 80s, probably mid 80s, there were the beginnings of the internet through different services like CompuServe, which is no longer around. Prodigy was one, which is no longer around. AOL is still around. So AOL was one of the first systems where you could log in, and it looked like the internet does today, because you'd log into AOL, you could read the news, you could check the weather, you could chat with friends, you could send email.
Point. At that point, what was the at that point the current operating system? It still
So
was.
back then would have been DOS.
Is DOS?
Yes,
But.
DOS. And so you would get, the early version of CompuServe or AOL software would run, and then it would come up, and they would have their own interface. So it was very
Oh.
simplistic back then.
Really?
And of course, it got much better when there was Windows 3 coming out.
So does didn't have any role getting you to the internet? I mean.
Well, it did, because back then, DOS had to deal with, in the hardware, what were called interrupt request ports, IRQ3, IRQ4. So you'd have your COM ports. There's one on the back of this computer. And that serial port could be used for a mouse. It could also be used for a modem. And some of the older modems, you'd take a phone and you'd put the handset on the modem, and it would communicate at 300 baud, very slow. Then the faster modems came out, 1200 baud, 2400 baud. Finally, went toward the tail end of modem technology over the phone lines was like 56 kb per second. Well, now we're up to, megabit per second. But anyway, so in the early days of some of these networks, you couldn't communicate from AOL to CompuServe. If you wanted to send an email to somebody, you'd both have to be on AOL, and then you could send the email. And so that's why people would sometimes get multiple email addresses so they could communicate with either system. And they would check AOL, they'd check CompuServe. There was one called PeaceNet. PeaceNet. So it was people concerned about world peace. They had their own system equivalent to AOL. So people working on global peace issues could communicate from around the world. And it was the beginnings of discussion groups online. You would post a message, others would read it, then they would comment. It was the beginning of that bulletin board systems. With a bulletin board system, you would just actually dial into a certain computer. It would have a phone number, you'd dial into it, you'd check your messages, you'd leave messages, and the fancy ones then would have 10 modems, so 10 people could be online at the same time or more. But all this was happening with DOS, and you would type in commands to get to these different things. There would also be something that would happen at DOS level where you would say, you would connect to another computer if you had a modem connection present, or if you just had the modem, you could dial into a computer using that. But you'd need some sort of communication software. And back then, that was actually a program that you would buy as something to communicate over the modem with different computers. So anyway, everything was sort of disjointed then. There was no smooth connected system like the internet today. You can send an email message from AOL and get to somebody on MSN, So anyway, things progressed along, and then by the early 90s, as I recall, it was Windows 3.0 came out. So that was what Apple had provided back in the mid 80s, the early 80s. Apple had their Apple computer, which used the mouse, and so that made it unique. And then by, probably the late 1980s, I would say early 90s, Microsoft was using the mouse before Windows came out. Microsoft had a mouse that would work inside of Microsoft Word, so you could see your cursor moving around the document. So it was a quick way to get from one place in the document to the other. Then they added scrolling features in Word, so people were using the keyboard less, using the mouse more. And then Microsoft announced Windows 3.0, and then Windows 3.1 and Windows 3.1.1. So that's where Windows really took shape by the time it got to Windows 3.1.1, it was very stable and reliable and worked well. And you could send faxes, you could receive faxes, you could do email. Then there was Windows 95, which came out in August of 1995. And then there was something called Windows 95 Plus. You could get an extra CD with some special noises that the computer could make and special icons and themes for the system. And so that was in 95. And that then became sort of the replacement for Windows 3.1.1. So in 1996, 1997, 1998, 1999, you might remember there was concern about some of the computers, the Y2K problem, and that most of the computers were written with just two digits for the year. So they weren't sure what was going to happen because we were going from, you know, 19, it would be just 98, 99, 2000 was just going to be 00, right? So
yeah.
What are we going to do? And Windows, Microsoft came out with, Microsoft, it was Windows Millennium Edition, ME. It had an amazing feature. It allowed you to go sort of back in time. Let's say something went wrong with the computer. You would say, go back to yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Everything worked again.
Mm-hmm.
If you installed a program and something went wrong, you could just go back.
Mm-hmm.
There were some third-party companies, not Microsoft, but other companies that sold a similar product
mm-hmm.
called Go Back, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And so this became popular because there were problems with some programs. You'd install it, then the computer would be slow or it wouldn't work right. Well, then we didn't see that Go Back in Time feature return for quite a while. There was Windows ME, for some reason, I don't know why, but it got very bad press. So people started sort of a rumor, oh, Windows ME is no good.
Mm-hmm.
And that just spread like wildfire. So everybody said, Windows ME is no good, don't get Windows ME. So nobody got Windows ME.
Mm.
I used it for years. It was wonderful. It had this great feature.
Wow.
But, you know, how I don't have a platform. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell everyone that. So anyway, Windows 2000 came out. So there was Windows ME, Millennium Edition, that came out at about the same time as Windows 2000. Windows 2000 did not have that go back in time feature, and it was more for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So they began to have this distinction between home computing and business computing.
Mm.
And that was where there was that fork in the road. And then from there, Windows XP came out, and that merged it again. So there's Windows XP. It wasn't a separate operating system, just Windows XP. But then they had different versions, Home Edition. Yours is the business edition, and you can find that out by going to the start menu, then right-clicking on My Computer, and then go to Properties. That'll tell you a lot about your computer. So here it says Microsoft Windows Professional XP, version 2002, Service Pack 3. So Windows XP came out a couple of years later then.
Yeah.
And that was to replace Windows 2000. And they wanted to bring together the best of both.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted the stability of Windows 2000 because it was very stable, very reliable mm-hmm. for businesses. Banks would use it.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted the convenience and the games and that rollback in time feature that I mentioned earlier from ME. So they merged that in Windows XP. So Windows XP, it's easy to use, it's stable, it's a very good operating system.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is Windows ME after or before 98? Windows 98.
Oh, I skipped Windows 98. Yes, right. Windows 98. Okay. So, yeah, it was Windows 95,
yeah.
Then Windows 98 came out.
Oh, okay.
Windows 98 was really, I think, an accommodation for some changes in hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was really becoming a problem. You know, people would have multiple printers.
Mm-hmm.
They would have scanners. They would have their fax machine, their mouse, some sound equipment, gaming, joysticks, all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer hardware had become very limited.
Yeah.
You had, you know, if you wanted to put a card in your computer,
mm-hmm.
there were only like maybe three or four or five slots, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And even those slots, you'd have problems because you'd put a card in, you'd boot up the computer, and it would say, you know, there's a conflict, interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Request IRQ conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, oh no, my modem and my scanner are on the same IRQ. So then you'd have to move these what are called jumpers. You'd have to open up the computer,
mm-hmm.
get the card out, switch the jumpers around.
Mm-hmm.
So now the modem would be on IRQ3, the scanner would be on IRQ4, And then if you wanted to...
IQ for?
It's called interrupt request, IRQ, interrupt request. So let's say you wanted to get one extra device, you couldn't because you ran out. So back around 1998, USB was introduced, universal serial bus. So a serial bus is actually very much like the... those slots in the computer, except it's not limited to five. I think it goes to 128. So you could have scanners, and you could have fax machines and printers. You could have laser printer, a color inkjet printer is very common. All these other devices, a mouse, sound cards, everything. And so that was really what Windows 98 was doing. And that was when we first started hearing this term about plug and play that became more popularized then. So the idea was... And I remember this distinctly because Windows 98 came out, and I thought maybe I'd be out of a job because the way Microsoft marketed that, they said, look, you're just going to get your computer, and that's the end of it. You get the computer, anything you want to plug in, you just plug in, and it'll recognize it. And I thought, what am I going to do if people have these computers? And, you know, I'm thinking into the future, it's just going to get easier and easier and easier. Yeah. They're just going to run themselves.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, it's going backwards. You know, it's gotten worse.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that was Windows 98. Yeah. And so then ME came along, and they saw ME as a failure in the same way some people think of Vista as a failure, Windows Vista. So anyway, good of you to point out that Windows 98. So, yeah, it was Windows 3.0, 3.1, 3.1.1, Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows ME, Windows 2000, shortly after ME, or I think around the same time, and then XP in 2002. And then XP held on for quite a while. And they realized they needed to refresh it a little bit. I don't know, it could have just been marketing at that point, because there were no really, that I can recall, there weren't any significant changes in computers. Now, Vista was being sold as this better operating system that lets you access more memory. They could have done that with XP.
Vista came after XP?
After XP.
Okay.
And, you know, they could have updated XP and said, now you can get to more memory. The other thing was larger hard drives were coming out. But again, you can just download an update and it fixes that. You don't have to change the whole operating system. But, you know, that's how marketing is, and that's computers. So they came out with Vista. It had all kinds of problems. It was really kind of a total rewrite. And then Vista was around for, I think, a year or two, 3 years. People were still buying XP. It's never happened before. That'd be like, you know, Toyota comes out with a 2011 Corolla, and people say, no, I just want the 2008, you know? Can you imagine having a company like Microsoft? And even Dell, you know, on their website, they say, this is shipping with XP unless you want Vista, but most people wanted XP. So finally we have Windows 7. That's where things are at now. And Microsoft is going to mix it up again. They're going to come out with Windows 8 at some point
soon. Really?
But so Windows 7...
Very, very current one right now is...
Windows 7.
Windows 7, okay.
And one of the problems with Windows Vista was that there were all these pop-up messages that people didn't understand. The computer would say... you know, this task wants to run, is it okay? And so you'd be constantly clicking on a button that says okay. And and so they fixed that with Windows, with Vista it was a problem, they fixed it with Windows 7. I think right now Windows 7 is fast, it's stable, it's easy to use. There are some, I think, user interface improvements. I don't think there's a real reason to go to Windows 8, but I think they just want to revive their economy a little bit, you know, and get some money coming in and new computers. And Apple has really transformed the industry with, it began with the iPod Touch and the iPhone had the touch screen. I guess the iPhone was the first with the touch screen, and then they went to the iPod Touch. But anyway, they began with the touch screen on these portable devices and then came out with the iPad. Gateway... and a Windows company, you know, and HP, they have desktop computers with touchscreen. And you can touch something and slide it across the screen and resize pictures. So Gateway and HP have these desktop computers that are like big iPhones, you know?
You know what? I still don't feel comfortable with touch thing. I rather use the mouse. I don't know.
It's more precise with the mouse.
Yeah.
And the touchscreen is very sensitive because you have a tap, you have tap, you have tap, hold. two fingers, two tap. You know, there's so many variations, and if you don't touch it just right, it can do something different. So,
And with Apple computers, what operating system do they use? Do they use Windows too?
Which one?
Apple.
Oh, Apple uses, at its foundation, it's an operating system from, I'm just going to guess, I think it's the 70s or maybe from the 60s or maybe before. It's called Unix.
Unix, okay.
And so there have been other user interfaces for Unix. One was called X Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Because people realize not everyone wants to type in commands just mm-hmm. to accomplish a mm-hmm. task. So with X Windows, there you'd load X Windows, and it was this really nice mouse interface to get to Unix
mm-hmm.
to do things. And so Apple said, hey, I think we can make it even better. Let's market this. And so they, you know, have their own version of Unix on these Apple computers. So it's very secure, very stable, very reliable.
I have ever seen, I think, Apple computer running Linux. I would love to see how Linux look like. You know?
Well, in Linux, you can run on a PC.
Uh-huh.
And with Apple, there's something called VMware,
mm-hmm.
Virtual Machine, VMware.
Mm-hmm.
And with an Apple computer, then you can have Apple operating system, Windows operating system, Linux operating system, all running.
Really?
Yeah.
In an Apple computer?
On an Apple computer.
Mm-hmm.
It's set up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the Windows computer can run Linux and Windows, but it can't run Apple
mm-hmm.
just because of just copyright issues mm-hmm. or trademark issues or something.
Yeah, because I wonder all the time why we don't find Apple like as much as I find the other kind of computers. Why I don't find them.
Yeah, that's a good question. Really, I think it's a market economy type of issue
mm-hmm.
and a cultural issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just how we've been programmed since we were little. And you see on TV
mm-hmm.
or in the print ads, it says, on sale, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
good bargains on this. This is the cheapest one. I mean, the University of Iowa, very well-established institution, they will get what are called bids.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to sell them a computer, you give them a bid. You say, well, my computers cost $2,000. And then somebody else will say, well, our computers only cost $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the University of Iowa is going to go with a $1,000 computer. It's cheaper.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what businesses do. They go with a cheaper computer. And so do consumers.
Yeah.
Consumers say, well, why would I pay $2,000? Here's one for $1,000. So that's how we think.
Mm.
Well, what people don't think is beyond today. They don't think about tomorrow, the next day, the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Apple has said is, look at the cost of ownership,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the cost of ownership for repairs and maintenance, fixing the hardware,
mm-hmm.
paying somebody to resolve software problems. I mean, that's what I do full time, is work on mostly Windows computers, because
mm-hmm.
Apple computers have very few problems.
Mm-hmm.
The Windows computers still have issues.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that, people believe, is built-in obsolescence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Microsoft as a company says, look, we're going to make it work. We don't want to make it work so good that nobody's going to buy the next thing.
Ah,
you know?
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And that's sort of a not-so-good way of doing business, but that's what some people believe is happening. What other companies do is they will have technology standing on the wings, or, you know, something that they're not going to release yet.
Yeah.
They have these 10 great things, like Apple probably has 10 really cool things that they're going to put in the iPhone,
yeah.
but they're going to start introducing those like one or two at a time, you know,
mm.
so that each time they introduce a new iPhone, it's going to be some new feature that you really want to have.
Yeah.
Now, if they introduced all 10 things, then they wouldn't have anything left for the next iPhone, you know.
It's a money thing.
It's kind of a money thing,
yeah.
you know, and I guess the business has to figure out how
yeah.
they're going to make it work. But so, and so that's what people really are looking at, is their finances, their budget. They can't afford to buy an Apple. They might even know in the long run the Apple would be cheaper,
mm-hmm.
you know, but right now they just don't have the money. They've just got to get something, so they go out and get something. And the same thing is true looking at cars.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a person has to go out and get a car, but you only have $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the car that's just $3,000, but then every month it's something else. You know, the transmission goes out, and then it needs front-end work, and then it needs balancing. All these things happen. And so that car, that $3,000 car, ends up costing you like $500 a month. By the end of a few years, you know, you've spent, $18,000
mm-hmm.
on that $3,000 car.
Yeah.
You know? And if a person was able to do it, if they were to say, you know what, I'm going to go out and get a new car, a small one, $15,000 car, something like that, they would put out actually probably less money getting a newer car, maybe even a used car that's like $10,000.
Yeah.
You know? So that's like the Apple and the Windows comparison. So Apple's $10,000, Windows is $3,000. Most people are going to go with the $3,000 thing.
Of course.
But in the end, they're going to spend more.
Uh-huh.
In terms of it may be frustration, it may be their business is not working because their computers are down, could be something like that. But there's going to be some frustration. And unless somebody's really computer savvy, then it can be problematic, you know, with Windows. So... anyway, so getting back to this progression then, well, I guess we covered Windows, you know, DOS to Windows and all the way up to Windows 7.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the things here, this computer is actually a perfect example of how I would get started with a brand new computer.
Okay.
And the very first thing we noticed was, and do you mind if I put this on my website too, the audio? Because it's instructional, it's good, yeah. So the very first thing I noticed when we turned it on was that we were logged into the computer and the account said administrator.
Yeah.
I've been into businesses where they've had a computer running for 3 years and they're still using the administrator account. So there's no other user account on the computer. And all of their files are stuck in this administrator account. If that one account ever gets messed up, then the computer's really going to be in bad shape. So what you want to do is the very first time you get a computer, and this is true even from Staples, Office Depot, Best Buy, wherever, often they will give you the computer and they'll just have the primary account. So I think it's good to have two accounts. One account would be kind of an administrator account that you just don't use.
Mm-hmm.
And then your own account.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes when these viruses hit, you know, virus infects the computer and then suddenly you can't log in, you can't use your account. You've lost all your stuff. There's a virus in your computer. Quite often the virus only affects the user account that you've been using.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's another account you can log in on, you log into that other account, you clean up the computer, and then everything's fine again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to have those two accounts.
Mm-hmm. And usually, what does, for example, an administrator account, what kind of software it has?
Good question. So when there are multiple people on a computer, like a home computer, and you might have parents and kids, everybody's using the computer.
Why do they call it administrator?
So the administrator account, there are two levels of access to the computer.
Yeah.
One level of access to the computer is administrator.
Yeah.
You can do anything.
Yeah.
You can delete files, you can erase things, you can delete user accounts. You have full control over the computer. So that's administrator.
Mm.
You can give it any name you want.
Mm.
You could call it administrator, you could call it supervisor, you could call it whatever, but when you give it that level of access, it can do anything. Then the other one's called standard user account.
Mm.
So that's what you might do, whereas if you have kids on your computer or maybe some friends coming over and visiting, they want to use your computer, maybe we'll create a guest account, visitor account, something like that.
Yeah.
So they can use the computer, they can go to the internet, but when they try to download something and it's a virus, your computer won't even let them. It'll say, I'm sorry, you'll have to talk to the administrator.
Mm.
So it's a very useful thing.
Mm.
Some people will even have their own account that they use day to day. They will just leave that on a standard user account. If they need to install a program, which doesn't happen that often, once every couple of months, well, then they log out, they log in as an administrator, they install the software, and then they go back to their normal user account.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as long as you have two accounts, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So just to recap, what we did was we were in as administrator, we went to the start menu, we went to the control panel, and from the control panel, we found where it said user accounts, and within user accounts, once we clicked on that, we could see, and this is Windows XP, so it's going to look different than other computers, but it just showed that there was a computer administrator that was called administrator and guest, and there was no other user account. And what was interesting was when we created your user account, that other administrator account disappeared. Now, it's not deleted, it's just not showing, because it really is. It's a system-level account that isn't intended to get used. So we created your user account by just clicking on Create an Account, and then we logged out and logged back in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was one other thing I changed here. Under User Accounts, there's an option that says Change the way users log on or off. Well, the reason I did that was because I did want to log back in and clean out those CD files, and so I changed it because normally there's what's called a welcome screen,
mm-hmm.
Well, if there's a welcome screen, it's not going to give me an opportunity to type in a user account name.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to have your user account, but I won't be able to type in administrator. Mm-hmm. I wanted to type in administrator. So I said, no, let's not have a welcome screen. Let's just have where you have to type in username and password.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as it turns out, the username was administrator with a capital A. The password was nothing, just blank.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often people will have the administrator, password will be admin,
mm-hmm.
A-D-M-I-N.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of common. But you'll want to remember that because in the future, if something happens to your computer, you need to log back in or you're using what's called Windows has a recovery or repair feature, it might say you need to enter the administrator name and password. So you'd have to type in administrator and then password would just be blank for years. So now we can turn the welcome screen back on. And so there's also another option here. It says use fast user switching. I'm not going to have a check mark there. I think it's good not to have a check mark there because what that means is you could have two users logged in at the same time, and it gives you a way to like quickly leave one user account and go to another user account.
Mm.
So maybe you're in the middle of five different things, and a friend says, oh, can I check something on the computer?
Mm.
You could quickly switch over to some other account. But it's really not good because it just means that the computer gets very slow
mm-hmm.
because it's trying to kind of keep track of two things at once. So anyway, that was all under change the way users log on or off under user accounts. And I'm going to create a new account. So you'll have your primary user account that is just whatever your first name is, and that's what people would type in there. And then the second user account, I'm going to call it visitor.
Okay.
The reason I'm not using guest
mm-hmm.
is because everyone knows there's a guest account. So
yeah.
if there's some virus or some hacker, I don't know, maybe they'd try to somehow take advantage of the fact that every computer in the world has a guest account.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not use that. So I said new user, I type in the name as visitor, now it says pick an account type, and I'm going to say limited. On some computers it'll be called standard, like I think with Vista or Windows 7 it says standard.
Mm-hmm.
But
what's
anyway,
the difference between limited? Oh, this is okay.
So it tells us, yeah, with an administrator account you can change and delete accounts, you can make system-wide changes, install programs, but the limited account you can only work with the things you're working on.
Mm, okay.
So for you, it's probably better just to for your account to be an administrator account and then let visitors have a limited account.
Oh, okay.
The reason for that is now with Windows, there are going to be regularly things popping up. There's going to be Adobe updates, and lately it's been every week or so. So you're going to want to always keep your Adobe updates going. Antivirus updates need to be updated. Windows updates.
I see many times Adobe, but I don't know what Adobe is. I know it's software, but I don't know what it is for.
Yeah, so there's this company called Adobe.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be another company called Macromedia,
mm-hmm.
and Adobe bought
mm-hmm.
Macromedia.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Macromedia had something called Dreamweaver and some other products for making websites. So now Adobe owns all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, early on, now, I'm going to interrupt here in a bit. I'm just going to log in as the visitor account, and this will be a good example of this is the visitor account we just created,
oh,
so I'm
okay.
going to show you some things here. But anyway, Adobe had something they called Adobe Acrobat Reader.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for many years,
mm-hmm.
and they are the only one, really, that created the standard way of sharing documents, you know? So you could have a document on your computer and send it to somebody who maybe has a different kind of computer or something, and they could see it exactly how you're seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very innovative.
Mm-hmm.
And Adobe was also one of the first companies to have special fonts.
Because
mm-hmm. as I was talking earlier, you know, the computers didn't really have fancy fonts
mm-hmm.
in the beginning. Take a tour of Windows is a little thing that'll pop up down here.
Mm-hmm.
And to save time, I usually click on that. I choose the second option to do the non-animated tour.
Okay.
Then I click Next, and it'll come up with this tour that you can look at later. It might be helpful. It's kind of an introduction to tell you a little bit about Windows XP and safe and easy personal computing, etc. A few other little tips. It's like an interactive tutorial. But anyway, to finish up about Adobe, they then came out with these fonts and then this special Adobe Reader, and then from there branched out, and they have all kinds of things. Adobe, there's Photoshop. And there was a publisher program. They were innovative very much in publishing early on. So anyway, so with a new user account in Windows XP, the recycle bin will be down here on the right-hand side, and there's nothing else on the screen. So what I normally do is go to the Start menu, then I right-click on My Documents, and I say Show on Desktop, because that's nice to have on the desktop.
Yeah.
And also the My Computer, I right-click, Show on Desktop. And then one other thing is under the Start menu, All Programs, Accessories, Windows Explorer. That's how we actually explore the computer and see what's on the computer. So I'm going to do a right-click and drag. So that means I'm clicking and then I'm moving the mouse. I'm still holding down that right one, and then I lift it up. And when you do a right-click and drag, then you get some options, right? So I'm going to say, you know, I want to copy that here. I don't want to move it, because if you accidentally move that and then it gets deleted, you're going to have a really hard time finding it again.
Really?
Yeah. I go to computers sometimes and people have, like, moved programs and things out of the Start menu, and then you have to go around and try to find them again where they are in the computer, because these are just shortcuts. And the original files have very strange names, and they're not easy to find. So, and I mentioned the right-click. The right-click is a way in Windows to ask questions. And you're asking a question about whatever you're pointing to. So if I point at My Computer, it says, well, these are some things I can do with My Computer. If I just point in the middle of the desktop area and click, right-click, it says, well, I can arrange the icons by name, for example. I'll do that. But these are other things you can do clicking there. So I'm not going to do anything
further. This is not for the internet? No.
Right. Interesting. It's the same name, because there's Internet Explorer and then there's Windows Explorer. And actually, when you open Windows Explorer, you even get a little, you know, address bar up there, which if we were to type in, you know, Google, I'm pretty sure Google would come up. It's like a standard address bar. It's just navigating the computer rather than the internet. But anyway, I'm going to close out of the visitor account, because we're not interested in doing anything in there. We really want to get into working on your account. So when
I just have a concern, I don't want to forget it. It's because it told me earlier there was kind of something here told me update the antivirus.
Correct. Yeah. So what we're not going to do, because it's already been done, but I would recommend that people do this, is here I can see there's a little, what's supposed to look like a fort with a flag on it, but it kind of looks like a tent, a check mark. That is the Windows Security Essentials. But anybody that wants that, they can go to the internet and do a Google search on Windows Security Essentials and find that and install it. So
because I don't know, do I have now Microsoft Essentials on my computer here?
Yes. And so how do we know that? Well, I can click here and go to, from the Start menu, I can go to All Programs. And it doesn't show me that here, but if I go to, oh, there we go. Yeah. If I go to All Programs, that's right, Start, All Programs, and Microsoft Security Essentials, and I can click on that, and it shows that it's installed, your computer's protected. It says here that real-time protection is on, it's all up to date.
No, really?
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened. Did you do anything?
Well, we talked. Remember I said, go to this and click on that. You must have installed it and not known it.
Yeah.
Or maybe they did. I don't know.
I did install it, but the message was all the time, like, update, you know, your computer at risk.
Correct, yeah. So
now it's,
what happens is when you first install it, it's not updated. It hasn't scanned yet, so you'll be getting these warning messages, you know. But now it's had time to update, it's had time to scan, so everything's green. And if there were problems, it would go to red. So there are a few other things that we should do. I'm going to go to the Start menu and then All Programs, and at the top of the list I'll see Windows Update. So I'm going to click on that. And it says internet connections required. So I think we're going to want to go to the internet. I'm going to try doing wireless connection here. And we're at the library, so when we connect, one thing it's saying is you're connecting to an unsecured network. Information sent over this network is not encrypted and might be visible to other people. Connect anyway. I'm going to do that. So what does that mean? Well, information sent over this network is not encrypted. Information sent over the internet's not encrypted. When you send an email halfway across the world, anybody can read that, and you know, government probably is reading it. So nothing's encrypted unless you intentionally encrypt it. Or if your web browser is connected to a bank's website,
mm-hmm.
and your web browser has a lock there and it says it's encrypted,
mm-hmm.
and the bank is encrypted, mm-hmm. then you're sending an encrypted message. It's encrypted from your computer on to the bank. It doesn't matter what's in between. Even if you're on, you know, this says it's a non-encrypted network, it's still encrypted data, right? So the distinction there is, this is wireless, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from your wireless notebook to the wireless connection,
mm-hmm.
between here and there, it's not encrypted. So if somebody has a device that can intercept that,
mm-hmm.
and you go to a website that's not encrypted, like just some regular website, they could probably see everything you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then it's not secure. So, but you probably don't care. You go to Google, you look up weather, you don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They could see what you're doing. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're saying is they're not encrypting it from your notebook computer to the router, to the wireless router. It's not encrypted. If it was on a secure network, and if it was encrypted, that means it doesn't matter what you're looking at. You could be looking at a non-secured website, a non-encrypted website, but it's still encrypted going over the airwaves.
Mm.
So if somebody receives it, they won't know what you're looking at. You could be reading the New York Times.
I have a question.
They
for example,
yeah.
if I am sharing, the same network in a building.
Yeah, right.
Everybody in their room, in their apartment. How in this case, if more than one person are sharing the, for example, just to share the, you know, the price instead of paying $50 or $30 a month, everybody can pay $15 or whatever. How in this case the flow of information?
There could be some concerns there. First of all, let's say somebody's illegally downloading movies or
mm-hmm.
music or doing some other thing that's illegal with the computer.
Mm.
If there are 10 people using it, well, then everybody's potentially implicated because they won't know. All they know is it's that IP address.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever's apartment's got that wireless that they're letting everybody use,
mm-hmm.
that's the first door that's going to get knocked on, you know.
Really?
So that's an issue. The other issue is, beginning with Windows XP and after that, Microsoft has tried to make it easy for people to share files and share printers. That's all networking. You know, you want to be able to share your hard drive, share mm-hmm. printer. So if you have a work group, the default work group set up, and in some situations, Windows has automatic printer discovery. So all you need to do is plug in a printer on the network to a computer, and then it shares it, and then everything kind of connects automatically. So if it's your own home network, well, then that's not really a problem,
mm-hmm.
because you're trying to share your printer and your files, and that's not a problem. But theoretically, if you hook up to a wireless network and everybody's on the same network and maybe has the same default work group, then other people can see other computers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not paying attention, like if you were sharing files, like maybe you think you're just sharing files with this person in your home, but as soon as you turn on file sharing, if you don't have it password protected, if you just say, oh yeah, I want to share this folder, you could be sharing it with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have then a little more concern and precaution to make sure if you're doing any kind of sharing of a printer or sharing of your files, that it's password protected.
Mm.
Now, if you have your own wireless router, then, you know, it's just you and whoever's using your router that can start sharing things, but nobody else will have access, especially if you have your router's password protected.
The router is like what, like a medium? What's the function of a router?
Let's talk about that, because basically what you'll find in a typical home will be either a DSL or a cable service providing internet, and there will be then a DSL modem or a cable modem. Okay. And sometimes all you have is the DSL modem or the cable modem. And then a computer plugs into that. Desktop computer plugs in, you're connected to the internet. So the modem just converts the information coming from the service provider into something the computer can understand with an Ethernet cable plugs into the back there. So that's the most simple setup. some of the companies, like Quest or Mediacom, will rent you, let's say in this case Mediacom, a cable modem, a little bit fancier. It might have four ports in the back, so you could plug in four different computers. And so that modem actually has then built into it something called a router. It's able to manage all these four computers sharing the same single service connection.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nice. So you're just four people in the same household, or even if you wanted to run a cable to your neighbor or something, they don't care because they're providing you with a limited access to the internet. Then that router manages four different computers, let's say, sharing the same internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, typically, routers these days are also wireless. So you'd have four wired connections, if you want, and then the wireless connection as well. And sometimes that all comes from, let's say, in this case, Mediacom or Quest.
Mm.
Okay. However, what some people do is they get the cable modem, whatever that costs per month, $2 a month or something extra to have that cable modem, I think they charge. So let's say you're paying $30 a month for internet, and that includes the internet service, probably 3 megabit per second speed, and you get a cable modem, but no wireless, no router. So you go to the store, you go to Staples or Best Buy or Office Depot, something like that, and then you get a router. So you plug your router into that cable modem. So now there's the cable modem, there's a cable coming from it, Ethernet connects to this router that you've bought, and then that router gives you wireless and connections into that box.
Why do you call it cable modem? Why those two words, cable and medium?
So, cable modem. So, you remember I pointed at the back of this computer and I said, that's the old place where a phone cord would connect in.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. So, it used to be you would have what was called a phone modem.
Mm-hmm.
The modem would plug into the phone jack.
Mm.
And there were limitations to that. It was an analog signal.
Mm.
That's why in the old days you could actually hear the modem.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the...
Is a modem like a converter?
Yes, converter. That's a perfect word for
okay.
it.
Okay.
So if you've ever seen, the movie You've Got Mail?
Uh-uh. I heard about it, but I...
So in any old movies where they're showing somebody connecting to the internet, you'll hear this noise. It goes like that's the noise of the modem, and then it once it's connected, it turns off. You don't hear that noise.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually configure the modem so you don't have to hear that. But it was helpful to hear it because then you'd know you could hear the phone ringing, you could hear the noise at the other end, like a fax machine makes the same noise. You could hear it connect, and then you knew you were connected.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a phone modem, but that was slow. So then came digital modems. DSL, digital subscriber line, was one of the first ones.
Digital, okay, is abbreviation for digital subscriber line. Okay.
DSL. DSL. So when that came out, if you're dialing a computer, you're not going to hear because it's all digital. There's no sounds to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's electronic. It's bits and bytes. And those were really fast. They started out being like 56K and then doubled. So you'd have, 128. 56K. Actually, 56K double would be 112, KB per second.
KB?
Yeah. Okay. And then 256, I think, was a big jump.
Mm-hmm.
So that was considered really fast, KB per second. But now we're dealing with, 3 megabit per second.
Mm-hmm.
12 megabit per second is available in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
So now what used to be a phone modem that would convert those sounds into this line you could have plugged into your, computer, you would either have the telephone cord going into a modem, and then from the modem you would plug into the back of the computer into that serial port,
mm-hmm.
or you might have the phone cord going into the computer, like on this one, and it has the modem built in.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was the phone modem, to convert from the phone line to the computer.
Who has a modem built in the computer, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's why there's a phone jack on the back of this older
computer.
Because
it has a modem.
Built-in modem.
Okay.
But now that's no good because they're really just two main companies right now for Iowa City providing internet service.
Mm.
There is Mediacom Cable, like cable television company.
Mm.
And that's all they had. Several years ago, that's all they had was just cable television.
Mm. friend who is not experienced, but he told me I can use, you know, there is phone called Yak or something?
Yes, yes. You plug it in, and then you can talk to people around the world. And
can I use that with this?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, or Skype, something else you can use.
I heard to hear about Skype, but I, as I said, my connection to the computer was a little.
Yeah.
But Skype is also like... like a website, like
Facebook, No, Skype is. It's originally it was for like a phone conversation or voice conversation. You could talk to people.
Oh, really?
And you could talk to somebody halfway around the world for free.
Oh, really?
Skype, you know.
Skype.
And
can
then
we go here?
Yeah, and actually we'll do that here too.
Okay.
So and Google has something as well. Google lets you talk to people. And then as video cameras became more common, then they let you do video chat. So video communications around the world for
free.
Can
I have a camera on this?
Yeah, you can plug in a camera. So, anyway.
Because it's, it has 1.6, I think. It's I don't know if this is a processor capacity or it is RAM. I always sometimes have confusion about...
RAM and hard drive and yes.
Because, I mean... they talk about the speed.
Right, right.
And the capacity, I think.
Yes. So let me describe that, too. And I'll finish talking about the modem. So anyway, the reason they call it cable modem is because a cable television company, and we've heard of cable television since, you know, the 80s or something, right? Cable TV's been around for a long time. But cable television, now the cable company has a modem that works with cable to give you internet. So they just call it a cable modem. It's just the abbreviation for it. And Quest, the phone company, they also deliver internet service through the phone lines, but this time digital. And they can deliver, in most places, it's 3 megabit per second. But now Mediacom, the cable company, has 12 megabit is fairly easy for everybody to get, 10 to 12 megabit. They have a service that's 20 megabit, 50 megabit, 100 megabit service. Extremely fast.
So, a bit here, I mean, one or zero, one logic and zero logic. Okay. I mean, like,
Oh, bits and bytes?
Yeah.
Here's the interesting thing about that. So, they measure it in megabits. So, a megabit, and all we really want to know is how long does it take to download, let's say, a 1 megabyte file, for example. Well, if it's a megabit, that means 8 bits makes a byte. 8 bits makes 1 byte.
Okay.
So if it's 8 million bits, then I'll divide by...
six?
Bits, so then I'll divide by 8 to get the... So it's one... Now I'm trying to see here. It looks like 1 million... What did we start out with? Sorry, I'm trying to do... well, let's to make it easy, let's say, if it's 8 megabit, then it would be 1 megabyte per second, presumably.
What was the difference between bit and byte?
Okay, and so the if you have 8 bits, and the bits were the ones and zeros.
Yeah, I know that.
So, and 8 of those, if I can have 8 ones and zeros, then I can go through the alphabet, I can have numbers, I can have some higher order characters, so... So 8 bits makes 1 byte. So the letter A, 1 byte.
Okay.
The letter A, B, C, D, E, F, G,
H, I, so this letter is 1 byte.
Yeah, so 10 bytes, I can have 10 letters. So, you know, in 1 megabyte, I can have 1 million letters. And in the days of like a floppy disk would be, well, the first floppy disks were 360K, and then there was a 1.2 megabyte floppy disk, and then a 1.44 megabyte 720 and a 1.44 megabyte floppy disk.
This is the storage capacity?
The hard ones, 1.44 megabyte. And that was considered a lot. And you could put a lot on there. It's 1.44, you know, 1,440,000 characters. That's a lot of stuff.
Do we use the same unit for a storage capacity and the same time for the speed?
No, but similar prefix and or suffix, I mean, similar stuff. Yeah. So let's get to that. So the... As far as storage, you can think in terms of the old floppy disk from a long time ago, from back when Windows 95 came out, 1995, floppy disk would hold 1.4 million characters, letters and numbers, a lot of information. One, roughly, let's just say a megabyte. Well, now you can get 4,000, like 4 gigabytes, so it's 4,000 megabytes, 4,000 million, you know.
Yeah.
So a billion characters in a little memory stick that plugs into your USB port, 4 gigabyte, and yeah, it's $10 or something. Mm-hmm. So we've just really leaped forward in terms of storage space.
Mm-hmm.
So we're measuring in gigabytes, basically. And so now when people go get a hard drive, they might get a drive that's 1 TB. So that's 1 terabyte. So that's, instead of gigabytes, it's...
terabyte.
1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's just...
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so it's 1,000,000 megabytes.
Yeah.
You know, it's... So it's 1 billion, like, characters or something. I'm losing the math here.
Yeah,
but anyway, you get the idea. It's a lot of stuff. But it's because now, you know, pictures and videos, that requires a lot more storage.
Mm-hmm.
And now we don't think in terms of, like, with the floppy disk, you knew it was, okay, 1.4 million... it's 1.4 megabytes, 1.4 million bytes. Well, that's 1.4 million characters.
Mm.
It was easy to do the conversion in your head because you knew, okay.
For example, if I have a computer
and
I go to connect to the internet, okay, the faster that computer connect me, that is decided by the processor or by what?
Well, it's kind of both. People
yeah.
used to think that it was really your connection speed that made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, when we're interacting with a website, a lot of the stuff that's on the web is really like a little program that has to get transferred to your computer and then run.
Mm-hmm.
So the faster your computer can handle that stuff, the faster your experience will be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with this computer and a fairly fast internet connection, you should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So let's just take a look at then, you were asking about these settings. If we go to the Start menu and go to the My Computer icon, I'll right-click and I'll say Properties, then we can get a comparison. Here. And so this is telling us that you have
Intel, so
there are really three numbers to consider.
Mm-hmm.
One number is your processor and how fast is it running.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a 1.6 megahertz and again, or, I'm sorry, 1600 megahertz or 1.6 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
processor. So that's pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the processors have kind of peaked out right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, 1.6 gigahertz and then, you know, 2 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz, 3 point something gigahertz. They're not getting faster than that.
Oh, really?
There's just an issue with that. So that, well, now what they're doing is multi-core.
Mm-hmm.
So since they reach the maximum speed, sort of like an 8-cylinder engine, we don't really have anything with more than 8-cylinder, but you might have seen some, they do these tractor pulls and race cars, they'll put two V8s in a car, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So they don't put a 16-cylinder in, they just put two V8s in or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea. They'll put multiple processors in.
Okay.
But that's the speed of the computer, 1.6 gigahertz or 1,600 megahertz.
What's the highest speed?
Well, that's interesting also because they might have a multi-core computer with maybe just 2 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 megahertz
mm-hmm.
or 2.0 gigahertz. There might be 4 of those in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really fast because they're all 4 running at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's the equivalent of having 8 gigahertz.
Yeah.
But there is no 8 gigahertz. There's only like 4 2 gigahertz possible.
Yeah.
So, or, you know, they have some that are faster than that.
Because what is really kind of a little bit confusing because we use... megahertz, gigahertz, I think for frequency. Usually.
Right, for frequency.
And now for speed.
And it's almost like, you know, in the car, your tachometer, the tach, shows your RPMs.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7,000 RPM, and then it's time to shift, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what this is spinning, but it's not spinning at 7,000 RPMs. It's spinning at like millions of, that's the frequency that's sort of processing things at, you know? There's no little motor spinning in there, but you get the idea. So... anyway, here, I can just show you a quick example. We can go to this website. Oh, you know, it's going to be very slow right now. This is actually a good learning experience. You see this gold shield down here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've been talking this whole time and not really doing much. It says that it's downloading updates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only 9% complete. Well, that's because we're on a public wireless network and it's probably downloading hundreds of megabytes, and it's limited.
It's updating
here.
What?
updating Windows.
Oh.
It's doing it automatically.
Oh, wow.
So we'll continue with some other things that don't require computer speed because
okay.
it's going to be slow right now.
Okay.
And most people don't realize that when it's updating, it's better to just let it update and not try to get any work done, because with Windows XP, it really it uses up a lot of
mm-hmm.
you know, the processing power to be doing that in the background. Well, anyway, you have an Intel Pentium R, oh, that's just Intel registered trademark. So anyway, Intel Pentium M for mobile, and it says Pentium M here on the outside. And then the processor is 1,600 megahertz, or we can say 1.6 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, there's also that megabyte, gigabyte, megahertz, gigahertz. Mm-hmm. It gets confusing. So anyway, that's sort of like the chip is like saying, you know, is it a V6, is it a four-cylinder, a six-cylinder, an eight-cylinder?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what the chip says.
Mm-hmm.
So there's Pentium, there was Pentium 4,
mm-hmm.
and then there came the Core 2 Duo.
Is Intel, is this represents a memory or what?
Intel is the company that makes the processor.
Oh, okay.
They make other things too, but when you hear about the Intel chip,
mm-hmm.
so it's the processor. It's like the engine.
So the processor is the CPU?
Yes,
okay.
Central Processing Unit.
Okay.
And that's the engine. That's how powerful it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the processor speed is like the RPMs.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, most of these cars out on the street right now,
yeah.
if you take them revving past 7,000-8,000 RPM.
Mm-hmm.
The engine will blow up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're not a race car.
Yeah.
Race car, finely tuned, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 RPM, you know, because it can. So your processor speed is how much of a racing engine do you have in here?
Mm-hmm.
The processor chip itself is like, is it a four cylinder, a six cylinder, an eight cylinder?
Mm-hmm.
That's what those two numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
That and that. And you can read about processors online, but there's. Now we're looking at the Core i3. Core i5, Core i7, these will be in today's computers that you buy at the store.
Is it CPU still?
CPU, yep.
Mm.
That's what now you have this Pentium, but the new ones are the Core.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But those here for the RAM, is that right?
Now let's talk about the RAM.
Mm.
So the RAM is like this table here.
Mm.
And the RAM determines how much workspace the computer has.
Mm-hmm.
Really, how much workspace does it have? And this has 512 megabytes of RAM. So that's like 512 floppy disks of storage space. That's a lot.
How many?
So 512 megabytes. So 512 million, so half a billion letters
mm-hmm.
of the alphabet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of space to work in.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs that because there's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you want to use three programs at the same time. It's probably okay.
Mm.
If you want to use 10 programs at the same time, that's going to create a problem.
Mm.
So RAM, then, is like this desk, this table.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the hard drive. Hard drive's also measured in megabytes, but now more so gigabytes or
mm-hmm.
you know terabytes. Mm. But anyway, hard drive is measured, let's say, in megabytes.
Mm.
The hard drive is like we're in a library and there are lots of bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard drive, that's those bookshelves.
Yeah.
So I can't take all of the bookshelves off the library. I can't take all those books and put them on the table. There's no room.
Yeah.
This table only has a certain amount of room on it.
Yeah.
That's the RAM.
Yeah.
The shelves are storage.
Yeah.
So the hard drive is storage. It takes time for me to get out of my chair, go to the bookshelf, get the book, bring it back. So if I'm going to be using a book a lot, I'm just going to set it on the table.
Yeah.
If the computer is going to be using something, it's going to bring it into RAM.
Yeah.
It's very fast.
Yeah.
If I need the book, I grab it. This book over here, I grab it. I can work with 10 books here, you know. So that's the RAM and then the hard drive. So the hard drive has more storage, but it's slower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The bookshelves have more books, but it takes time to go get them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a problem, though. Here it says your processor speed, the actual speed that this computer is running at,
mm-hmm.
221 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just said that your computer is capable of running at 1,600 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
So it's running at just a fraction of what it's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely slow. You saw I tried to do something earlier, it wouldn't even do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been running into this problem a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new computer, essentially. This is just like new, this computer. It's a used computer, but it's just like new. And what happens is, particularly with this Pentium M, M being for mobile, it thinks that you're going to be traveling. Mm. It thinks that you want to conserve the battery power. How can it conserve the battery power? Well, it can make the screen go dim. It will do that automatically. Mm-hmm. If I unplug the power, the screen will go dim. You see how it went dim?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to plug the power back in. It says the battery is critical. Mm. One thing on a used computer, the battery probably, after a year or two, usually batteries wear down. Mm-hmm. And on this particular Dell, if you go to eBay, you can buy a new battery. It might be $50, maybe $70.
By the way, can mm-hmm. I use the laptop without needing an external power, like
no.
the battery?
No, that's what we just found out now. I thought we would have at least, you know, a couple of minutes of battery life on this computer.
Uh-huh.
No, none.
Okay, if the battery is in a good shape, can it...
Then you could. If the battery was in good shape, sure. So normally when you unplug the cable like I did, all it would do is it would dim the screen to try to conserve on battery power.
Mm-hmm. How much a battery, new battery would be?
I think $50.
Really?
Yeah.
Where is it usually? Where is it?
And so the battery is stored on the notebook, usually underneath.
Oh, here.
This one.
Oh, really?
And it's, you know, these other things have screws on them, right?
Uh-huh.
You see the screws? But this one doesn't have a screw. This one's user replaceable, very easy. But when I push this little button on the battery that's supposed to be an indicator light,
mm-hmm.
nothing. The mm-hmm. battery's completely dead. So you would go to eBay.
Mm-hmm.
You'd order this. They're very common. You'd want the Type C 1295.
And this is the whole thing is the battery?
That's the battery.
Oh, okay.
You'd put the new one in, and then you'd have probably 2, 3, 4 hours maybe of use, and you'd keep charging it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'll warn you is, this is a Dell Latitude D600. This particular notebook and some of the other Dells, if you leave the battery in,
mm-hmm.
like we're leaving it in now,
mm-hmm.
Over a period of time, it just wears out.
What do you mean by leave it in?
Just like it's in right now.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly at night, you turn off the computer, the battery's still in there. It's sort of constantly draining that
really?
Battery. Yeah.
So I should take it off?
Take it off when you're not using it. And if you're sitting at home working on the computer...
How can I charge it then?
When you're ready and you know you need to have it charged,
mm-hmm.
you plug it in, let it charge up. Once it's fully charged...
Through the computer itself?
Through this power cord.
Oh.
Plugged into the computer.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. But Dell...
But the computer should be on in order for it to get charged or to be
you
off?
You could have it off or on.
Oh, really?
Either way.
Oh.
I think it charges faster if it's off, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How long should it be like?
It can charge probably, I would think, in 3, 4 hours it should
mm-hmm.
be fully charged. A good battery. So, anyway, I want to make sure we get through all these things. So, we were...
I had to give her a chance to...
Oh, she's with me, so...
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
She gets my time the rest of the week
okay.
to ask computer questions.
Okay.
But she's pretty smart herself.
Okay.
So, a few things I wanted to cover here. Most importantly is this issue where you go to the Start menu... You right-click on My Computer, you go to Properties, and you want to compare your processor speed, in this case 1.6 gigahertz or 1,600 megahertz. That's what it says the processor is capable of, and then the actual speed. Now, what was it before? 200-something, right?
Yeah, how did
Now
how
it's 586. So it's adjusting itself. It's adjusting itself because it's a mobile processor, and it wants to optimize the battery power, which in this case we're plugged in and it doesn't matter anyway. But so, in fact, I'm not even going to allow it to connect to the internet right now because that's just going to cause a slowdown again.
This is the process to complete, yeah.
But when you get home, let it stay on for, you know, a while and let it finish those updates because those updates are really important.
Mm-hmm. But if we disconnect, if I disconnect now and go home, then...
It'll continue.
It will continue.
Yeah, like right now it says it's 2%, but I think it's going to catch up anyway.
Like 2% updating Windows?
Windows updates. Yeah, and actually, if you want to see those, well, the first thing I need to do is speed it up,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise everything else we do is going to be slow.
Mm-hmm.
So let's do that. I'm going to go to the Start menu. I'm going to go to the Control Panel. Then we're going to go, there are two views. There's classic view, a way of looking at the control panel,
mm-hmm.
and then there's category view.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in category view right now, and I'm just going to click on printers and other hardware. Let me see if it's other, under there. Yeah, and then under here, no, it's, you know, it's really, oh, here's power options under C also. If I go back and change to classic view, it's a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just glance and see here's power options. But anyway, that's what we want to get to is power options.
Mm-hmm.
And here it says portable laptop. Well, it's a portable, it's a laptop. However, that's really causing a problem. It's really slowing it down.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using the computer, you want it to be as powerful as possible. And if you're not using the computer, you can turn it off. Mm-hmm. You don't really need to mm-hmm. be slowing down the processor.
Mm-hmm.
For now, I'm just going to say, let's go with always on. And again, you need to be in charge of managing that power. You don't want to leave it on all the time because that unnecessarily uses electricity.
Yeah.
So I'll say always on. I'll click OK. Now I'm going back to the start menu. I'll right-click on my computer. I'll go to properties. And we'll take a look and see what the speed is at. It's still at 589 megahertz instead of 1,600 megahertz. So let's go back to control panel.
How does that happen?
It's through the power management. It's trying to slow down the computer. But one thing also is while we're under power management, I want to go under the Hibernate tab and make sure that Enable Hibernate does not have a check mark, because that's another thing that's complicated. It stores stuff in the memory on the hard drive and it can cause problems. So anyway, back at power schemes, let's go here and do minimal power management. I tried that always on before. Didn't work. So we're going to do minimal power management. Click OK. Back to the start menu. Right-click on my computer. Go to properties. Still it's slow. Boy, this is a mystery. I'm going to go back here again. Because until that's fixed, your computer is going to run like something from 30 years ago.
Really?
You know, yeah. So let's go back to power options. Maybe under presentation or home office desk. Let's try that. Because sometimes what happens is Windows will improperly deal with the power management features. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to just turn it off. Usually it's not this stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you tell it you want minimal power management or always on, and then it will be fast.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case, there may be something set in the computer's what's called the BIOS,
mm-hmm.
actually the hardware settings of the computer, before it even gets to Windows. There may be something set in there that causes it to slow down.
Mm, really?
Yeah. And the thinking was, back when people didn't know what to do to make batteries last longer, they thought, well, maybe there's something we can do to use less electricity and then get more life out of the battery.
Mm.
So they thought, well, let's slow down the processor. So I'm going to see if we can look at some settings here in the BIOS. That's all correct. Alt-P to page down.
This drive, let us make change of the setting.
Yeah, that will leave. Boot speed, 1.6 gigahertz. That's interesting, or compatible. Always allows you to choose between the computer's processing speed default and compatible. A slower compatibility speed allows you certain speed sensitive. Okay, so we'd want the faster speed. But there should be something in here about, you know, causing it to run slower. Let's look here. Serial port, parallel, pointing device. Nope. Battery. Intel speed step is enabled.
Mm-hmm.
So allows speed step to operate in multiple performance states. That's what we want to disable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Normally, a person wouldn't have to do this on their own. And if you set the wrong things in the BIOS, you can mess up the computer. So I probably won't even suggest people do that. So I'll press Escape. save changes and reboot. But if somebody is familiar with the BIOS settings in a computer, they can go in, they can look and see if there's something there about power management or slowing down. And so anyway, back when batteries weren't very powerful, all that people knew to do was to slow down the processor, to use a little bit less electricity, and to dim the screen. So maybe you'd get an extra half an hour, or maybe an hour out of the battery. And people don't think about it much anymore, but in the early days with notebook computers, the selling point was, how many hours does the battery last? You know, and one would last 2 hours, the other would last 3 hours, and some company would say, oh, we have the longest lasting batteries in the industry, you know? So, anyway, I think in the next 5 minutes we'll try to wrap up, get to a good stopping point. So, I think this has been a pretty good sort of introduction.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the next session is going to be Friday, October 7th.
Okay.
And we could do some more.
I don't know. Do you have, you said you have like a website or whatever?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I can give you our card so we can be in touch between now and then.
Okay.
But let me just check the speed again. I'm going to do start button, right-click on my computer, properties. It's still at 598. So there's something going on with this processor. And that will take, I guess, a little bit more investigation. But it looks like it's secure, which is good. You have the Microsoft Windows Security. What I would say at this point, this is probably a good, you know, like I say, bringing it to a close, but the next steps that I would take with this computer is if you have $140, you can go to Staples, Office Depot, or Best Buy, or someplace like that, and get Microsoft Office 2010 Home and Student Edition. So you'll get Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint, get those installed. If you want to save $140, you can go to openoffice.org.
Openoffice.org?
Yeah, and get basically those same types of programs for free. Very good product. But that's important. Have some sort of way to do word processing. The other thing you need is Adobe Acrobat Reader 10. So if you just go to Google and type in Adobe Acrobat Reader, it'll go, you'll get that. Adobe Acrobat Reader 10, and Adobe Flash. And I'll put that on the website because I'll have the recording and the notes and everything from tonight so you can go back and see all this, these recommendations.
Okay.
And the antivirus you have, but for people that wouldn't have that, it's just the Microsoft Security Essentials. And beyond that, it would be just, you know, certain utilities that some people use. But I mean, those are the main things. Then you can get to the internet and you can go from there.
What about the updating procedure? I go and just keep it plugged in there?
Yeah, for that, when you connect to the internet, it's already set. If I go to Start Menu, and then I right-click on my computer, and I go to Properties, then here is Automatic Updates. There's a tab there. It says it's going to automatically update, and every day at 3 a.m. it's going to try to go ahead and install those things.
And install what?
So it says, automatically download recommended updates for my computer and install them every day at 3 a.m.
Okay.
So whenever it can update, it's going to try to update.
Okay. So so at that point, I should have it plugged in so it can update or what?
In, connected to the internet.
I should.
Plugged
in. Okay. Plugged in, connected to the internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I think that's a good stopping point, though, and then... If you want, between now and next time, we can,
yeah,
we can
sure.
do that.
But Thank you very much.
I think this will be a good recording for people to want to get an introduction to computers, kind of an overview
of
the background of how we got to where we are today. And then from there, they can...
Very good points. I wish if I could, while you are saying, just